Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
Stuck in a dinner rut? Let Cook Unity handle dinner with chef-crafted meals delivered right to your door. Cook Unity makes it easy with new menu drops, weekly recommendations, and a growing community of award-winning chefs, plus over 400 flavorful meals for every palate. Shake up your meal routine. Go to cookunity.com/mealtime50 or enter code mealtime50 before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's cookunity.com/mealtime50.
Folks, welcome back to the Biz World Channel, the EMBC Network, with your host, Hurricane H. Today's guest is a powerhouse in global branding and digital marketing. She's the founder and CEO of a firm that works with everyone from startups to major brands like Colgate, Virgin, Microsoft, and the New York Times. She's led marketing at Zipcar, Inc.com, and Launch Media, and has held key roles at Coca-Cola and U.S. Treasury's 1996 Olympic coin program, and it just goes on and on. She is the CEO of Mavens and Moguls, a marketing firm. So please welcome Paige Arnoff-Fenn.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk to you today.
Well, it is like you and I, we had a brief just chat before the show, which is usually typical, but I would say privilege and honor to have someone of your, you know, magnitude with me because of the work you do. And you know, marketing is a huge thing, right? And it is an area of work that I've done myself. And, you know, it's still attached to what I do. I mean, I'm in the media now and still I'm doing the insurance sales and all that. So it is a big thing, but I think everything evolves around, you know, the work that you do. But before we get into all that good stuff, because I think there is some more, you know, things that would like to hear about your back journey. I mean, because you do have a journey that got you into this world. But so I'm just going to ask, you know, what got you into marketing in the first place? I mean, because that is a tough place to be. That's a tough world. How did it all start?
I didn't start in marketing. When I graduated from college, I went to Wall Street in New York City. You know, I graduated in the 80s and Michael Douglas had just won the Oscar for the first Wall Street movie. I saw the movie my senior year in college. It looked really fun. And so I took a job thinking I was going to conquer the financial markets. And I realized pretty early on that it was not going to be a good fit for me long term. But I had made a 2-year commitment. I was an economics major. My dad and both my grandfathers did commercial banking, so I thought banking was going to be my path. And I just realized very early on, even though I'm good with numbers and I'm very analytical, that this was not a career path that I wanted to be in for the rest of my life. But because I made a 2-year commitment, I just buckled in and did as good of a job as I possibly could. But then I went back to business school and decided I needed to rebrand myself. I needed to get out of finance and find something else that was going to be a better fit for me. And when I looked at what I loved about my job on Wall Street, all the activities that I liked doing, none of them were finance related. It turns out everything I loved doing was more marketing. When the deals closed, I got to put an ad in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. When we celebrated the end of a transaction, I got to plan a closing dinner and buy mementos for everybody who worked on the team. And my girlfriend said to me, Paige, what you love is advertising, promotions, event planning. All those activities are marketing activities. Those are not finance. You need to be in marketing. So when I went back to business school, I had to take a marketing class for the first time. It was a required class my first year. And it turns out I got the highest grade in the class. So I thought, you know, my girlfriend's pretty smart. She had me all figured out. And I got a summer internship in marketing, and they made me an offer to come back when I graduated a year later. And I've been in marketing ever since. And so I've had kind of three chapters to my marketing career. I started working for really big companies, Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, you know, the most recognized brands in the world, huge budgets. These are brands that sponsor, you know, the Olympics, and, you know, they spend the most money, and these are the brands that everybody has in their house. I loved learning about marketing, working for these big companies, but the internet started to really take off in the mid to late 90s. And I just got very distracted because all these startups were doing these really cool things. And I felt like I was missing out. So I quit my big corporate cushy job at Coke, and I joined a startup that no one had ever heard of before. I think my mother and my bosses thought I was having a nervous breakdown. Like, why would anybody leave marketing at Coca-Cola for a company that, you know, people didn't even know existed? But it was so much fun. We went public in 1999. We were sold to Yahoo. I did another startup as the head of marketing, and a year and a half later, it got sold. And then I did another startup as the head of marketing, and it went public and it got sold. So I was just having a ball. I loved working with these scrappy brands. Like, they didn't have very big budgets. So I got very good at guerrilla marketing and working with small budgets to try and help these companies get noticed. And then when 9/11 happened, I had just gotten bought out of my third startup, and people needed help on marketing. And they came back to me asking, you know, what can you do? We just laid off our marketing department, but we need some help. And I hung out a shingle, and I've been doing it independently ever since.
Wow, that's quite a bit of time and time of excitement, because I'm listening to you, and the story is powerful, because you know, it's funny, this kind of, it's like a theme that repeats itself a lot, whereby someone starts a career path in a standard world, in a different world, and then wind up in a career path that is completely different. So it is very unique. And matter of fact, I think there are studies that show that 90%+ of people, they kind of wind up doing something different from what they start off, you know, with, you know, in college, right? And so, but I think every one of those paths, right, they were the founding, I guess, the foundation, I would say, for who you are and who you were then, and how you built up. Because I'm sure, even though you went to marketing, all the stuff you've learned before in finance and all these things, what part of, you know, because eventually as a business person and so on, so that stuff is going to be with you. It's going to help regardless. And even in the marketing space, as you, to your point, as you're figuring out budgets for, you know, smaller companies, for example, that background is very helpful to design things and know what to work with. So it is, you know, and it's a message for people out there. Again, you know, we will change careers in our paths, you know, no matter how good you are. I mean, even doctors, sometimes I've seen doctors who actually deviate from practice and, you know, the medicine into maybe education and other, you know, platforms and so on and so forth, other ways of sharing their knowledge and skills. I mean, I've worked in the insurance space for a long time, and we have doctors that actually don't practice medicine, but they actually are the doctors that run the medical side of an insurance, you know, company, for example. So, I mean, there's a lot of that, and it's a big message to people out there. If you're out there, you got to do what you got to do, and you got to see what works for you. And finally, you're going to find yourself in a world and that you're going to enjoy it and you're going to stay in it. But I love your story. I mean, first of all, working for these big guys. I mean, you mentioned some huge names, Coca-Cola. I mean, they rule the world in a lot of areas, right? And I don't think you can go somewhere without seeing some Coca-Cola, you know, ad or a piece of I don't know, a billboard or something. Doesn't matter where you are, you're going to see it, right? It's almost like impossible to miss them. And so, and you're right. I mean, their budgets are just, I don't know, you know, millions and millions of dollars every year that go into this. And you're right. They sponsor big things. I mean, big events and so on and so forth. And they're not the only ones. There's so many out there. Right. And, but you've dealt with that. Now, again, now the question to you is that you work with these big guys. How was that experience? I mean, cause that's gotta be humbling. I mean, it's cause there's a lot of, I would say politics and maybe red tape, you know, for someone that, you know, and someone can actually, because it's funny you said that I went from big guys to smaller guys, you know, like I've heard this expression about being a big fish in a small pond kind of concept. You know, some people don't understand what that is as a, you know, a shift, especially when you make a decision that is a career, you know, changing, you know, path. They look at you like, well, you can be a small guy, you know, in a big place and in the ocean, a big, a small fish in a big fish, you know, ocean, or you can be a big fish in a small pond. How does that work? And frankly, there's no real answer to that. Everybody tries whatever they see themselves, and you can do just well in a small place as, you know, maybe even better at times, because there's a good example here. You're able to build these teams or these companies to scale to a level where they were sellable and profitable, and they were acquired, and you know, that's big money and so on and so forth. So you were able to do that. So what's the experience working for large and then the little guys? Now, of course, you talked about the budgets. That's one area, but even the politics and running ideas and so on and so forth is very different.
Yeah, so working for a big company, it's very established. I mean, Procter & Gamble, they literally invented the concept of brand management, running a brand like a business. And they have a process to do everything. If you're launching a product, changing the packaging, how to do advertising, how to promote it, they invented the rules. And so learning from the master, I mean, you are going to the source of marketing. You know, I called it the Mecca of marketing. I mean, you're learning from the best. And every category Procter & Gamble competes in, their product is number one. And sometimes it's number one and number two, because they have categories where they have multiple brands. So you're really learning from the source. And, you know, they are teaching you. It's a masterclass. Every day, you know, you're just learning how to do it at a very high level. That's great when you're young in your career, because you're being trained and developed to be, you know, the best of the best. The flip side of that is it's pretty constraining. Like, they're not looking for you to be creative in terms of, I mean, it's great to show creativity within your brand, but they're not looking for you to recreate the wheel. And I think if you had talked to any of my bosses from that chapter of my career, they would probably shake their head and say, you know, Paige was really smart, great work ethic, a lot of energy, but boy, was she a pain in the butt. You know, I'd give her an assignment and she'd say, you know, have you thought about this? Maybe we should try that. I have a great idea. What about XYZ? And the truth is, those companies are not looking to recreate the wheel. They just want you to do it their way. They know that it works. They know they have a system. And I think I was always trying to bend, break, or change the rules. And that is not the way you're successful in a big corporate hierarchy. They just want you to execute on their plan. And so, now when I look back at that chapter of my life, I'm really grateful that I started there and I learned such good training. I mean, I was really well trained, but I'm actually amazed that I was as successful as I was in a corporate hierarchy, because, you know, the word entrepreneur was not really used back then. But I think I was very entrepreneurial in a corporate environment. And I think I was probably feeling pretty frustrated because, you know, my bosses were always saying, you know, Paige, don't overthink this. Just go do what I'm telling you to do. And so when I saw these small companies popping up when the internet was really getting going in the 90s, there was just something very attractive. Like it just looked like the Wild West. There was so much going on, and they were obviously playing by a different set of rules. They did not have the money. They did not have all the, you know, Coca-Cola was over 100 years old when I got there. The brands that I worked at Procter and worked on at Procter and Gamble were like 30, 35 years old. Like they were older than me at the time. So, you know, when you work with a brand new startup, and they need all the basics, they need a logo, they need a tagline. Maybe we changed the name or created a new spinoff brand. I mean, you were there at the ground floor. And so you're making really kind of key decisions about the DNA of that brand. And that was not my situation at P&G and Coke. So, you know, I think when I worked at those big companies, I always felt like if I got hit by a bus crossing the street getting lunch, someone would be in my desk at my, you know, in my office, sitting at my desk within hours, you know. They wouldn't miss a beat. When you work at a startup, like your ideas, you can trace back these little decisions that were made early on in the company. You remember, you were there when that decision was made. Like you knew how that message got crafted or what you did to figure that out. Like you were part of that brand story. And then when I started my own company and hung out a shingle, I mean, it is like a child. I mean, I named it. I created that brand. I know every story of how every client came to be part of the Mavens and Moguls network. So, you know, there was definitely, you know, it's not that surprising to me now looking back. My longest job before I started my company was 3.5 years. And now I've worked for myself for more than 24 years. So I joke that, like, if I get sick of my boss this time, I'm dead because I could never go back and work for anybody else ever again. Now I understand that I really was very entrepreneurial, but I didn't realize it at the time.
Well, thank you. There's a lot of great, you know, I guess, takeaways from your description of the expertise and really the journey. One being, first of all, when you start a career in general, right, and it's always best to work with the best and the greatest and the largest, because to your point, there's a lot to learn. You know, and I can relate to a lot of stuff that you stated throughout your, you know, presentation here. One being, my first job was at Walt Disney World. And, you know, frankly, I mean, when it comes to customer service, especially being in sales, and you know,
absolutely, that was like the best.
Yeah, I mean, I it's funny. I was recently in Dubai, and I was meeting with a friend who actually just wrote a book, and he was doing the signing of the book, and so we were just talking, and we did both work at Walt Disney at different times, and we were talking about how that really just influenced who we were, you know, in the future, right? Because really, a lot of the stuff, the basics that we learned there, we apply today, right? And that's the thing. That's something you can never, it's like priceless. And frankly, as an advice to people, if you really want to do something in your career path, you know, it's good to actually go into these places. And yes, it's going to be a lot of, you know, stuff, and they want you to execute. They don't want to for you to be too creative, because they already have that stuff, you know, lined up, but they want you to do things. But you learn a lot of things, from operations to logics to strategy, tactical stuff, you know, the whole nine. And you know how they're doing it. And obviously, it's successful. They've been doing it long enough. And so that never goes old, right? It's and by the way, they're always improving. And to your point, you know, you might want to throw an idea, but they probably hashed that idea already. And it was okay. We've tried that, or, you know, it's just, you know, put somewhere in the back burner. But yeah, so that's the first point that I want to make about what you stated there. But also, to your point, the transition into a smaller place, you know, it's a whole different experience, which I also have, you know, have had the, I guess, the privilege to experience. Because when you are a company that is a startup, and funny, in my world, in the managed care space in the US, what I started, it was really a baby concept. I mean, this was like in the early 90s where it was just a demo, you know, project. Really, it was a demonstration of this Medicaid managed care and Medicare managed care. And it was just like something new. Now it's like pretty much everybody knows about this stuff. Right. Back then, it was not. I mean, it was just small companies that are getting these contracts with the government, trying to figure out, you know, in this insurance space, and it's a specific, you know, format. And I was there in the inception of some of these companies. I mean, in New York at the time, we had five companies, literally. And so I was one, and we were one of the largest, you know, and when it came to numbers and strategy and all the stuff. And so, but I've seen that company go from like literally 20 employees to like, you know, thousands of employees. And I've seen it going from few members to like thousands of members. And so it's a huge, and you're right. Like I can relate to your point. I have dates of like when the transition happened. I mean, it's funny. I was talking to someone about a project recently. And they asked me the question, like, tell us about yourself. I was like, well, I was there before it all happened. and frankly, it is. And it's a good feeling, but no one can relate to that unless you experienced it yourself. And so the other thing that you stated is the entrepreneur part, right? You know, there are people that are not meant to be employees. They have a leadership, you know, DNA and an entrepreneurial, you know, DNA. They need to be in business. They're supposed to be running. And that's why, you know, it was about you. You were always creative in your mind. You try to do things. And obviously in an environment that is already set and saturated in a format or way, shape, whatever it is, you're not going to thrive as much. But in a format where you are flexible and you have the leeway to be creative and change things. I mean, you talked about from a logo to maybe brand color and so on and so forth. Those are things that, you know, sometimes you get someone who has finances, he has money, and they have an idea of a company, but they may not know all the details about it. And it takes a lot to actually build that. And you need someone next. So that's another thing for people that are watching and listening, is that you need to find out who you are. I mean, some people would be fine by just working for a corporation and just delivering whatever projects. And I know in marketing is very tough, because I've worked with marketing colleagues, and they put a lot of hours. I mean, these deadlines are there. You're supposed to do this. There's materials, communication, this, that, the other. I mean, and you have seasons and you have to change things, and you have to be constantly working. And there's regulations and all this stuff. I mean, and there, I have to say, I mean, marketing people are very meticulous about everything. I mean, from a front, I mean, listen, I've had bosses that were like, I'm more of a less detailed person, you know, at least I was. And you know, when you're talking to someone who's marketing, you know, expert, they'll look at everything, like, you know, the font size, you know, what font you use, and the, like, I mean, the spacing. I'm like, I don't even see that stuff. I mean, literally, I can't even see it, but they do. So these are things that are important. But understanding these values in the business world, they're huge. So now, Paige, there's a big question. In the world, you mentioned branding. What the hell is branding? I mean, so, most people think they know what it is. And I do have an idea, but I'd like you to expand on that, because branding is huge. And you know, it's everything. That's what some experts will tell you. You got to build a brand. We hear this all the time. You create your own brand. What is that in the scheme of marketing? And even if you can go deeper, like, you know, marketing in general, like, you know, because people confuse marketing and, you know, maybe with sales and, you know, maybe with, you know, advertising. So if you can give us close look, you know, of like from the big picture, the big thing, yeah, you know, and the umbrella into the details, and then we can go into the new world, the new age, which is basically social media, digital marketing, and the future that's here already, AI. So let's go through there.
So, you know, marketing is a term that gets thrown around a lot. Mm-hmm. And it can mean different things to different people. So, for instance, when somebody finds me, they were told about me, or they stumble upon my website, or someone tells them to call me and they say, I have a marketing problem. My first question is always, please describe to me what that problem is, because marketing means so many different things. You know, I think of marketing as like the umbrella, and under the umbrella, there's, you know, advertising, promotion, you know, market research, the packaging, the logo, the tagline, all those things are parts of marketing. I don't know if you've ever seen, it's like a cartoon almost, with a bunch of people that are blindfolded, and they each are touching one part of an elephant, but they don't know what it is. And somebody said, "What are you touching?" And nobody says an elephant, because one of them's touching the leg, and one of them's touching the tail, and one of them's touching the nose, and one of them's touching the ear. And so they're all describing different things, but in fact, they're all touching an elephant. That's kind of the way that I think about marketing, because some people call me and they have an advertising problem. They have a messaging problem. They have a communication problem. But in their mind, it's a marketing problem. So, you know, a brand to me is a promise of a consistent experience. So every time you interact with a brand, you know what you're getting. Think about yourself going to Starbucks or McDonald's. You have an idea in your mind what that experience is. You know what the menu's going to offer. You know what it's going to look like. You know what it's going to taste like. And so they spend, you know, decades of time and a lot of money to reinforce what that brand means. And you can imagine if they didn't create a solid brand, how confusing it would be. Because if you were in New York City or San Francisco or London or Tokyo, and you walked into a McDonald's, and in every place it was completely different, it would be very confusing. You know, it would take you a lot of time to figure out, what am I going to order? Where, like, I don't understand, like, can I stay here? Do I sit? Do I, you know? And so you want to build a brand because you want to have that relationship with your audience, that they know that they have a dependable product or service, that every time that they show up, that they know what they're getting. And when you build a brand, you create this relationship, this trust, and people pay more for brands. If you're a brand, you stand out. People remember you. They know how to find you. They can recommend you. And you might cost more, but you're worth it, because I know I want the Big Mac and the Quarter Pounder and the Grande Latte, and you know it's going to be exactly what you want. It's going to fill that need and solve that problem. I think if you're not a brand, you're basically a commodity, and a commodity competes on price. And the only way you can compete is to lower your price. And if you have to do that, you're not going to build a very good business. You're not going to be able to be sustainable or profitable. So being a brand really matters. You want to be the brand that pops off the shelf. So when I'm grocery shopping, you know, a generic brand, the only reason you're going to buy it is because it's cheap. And you're not going to pay a premium for a generic. I want to be a brand that people trust and that they like and that they will tell people about and be willing to pay me fairly for the business that I've created. So that to me is a very important distinction and why a brand matters. And today, I think everybody is a brand. I mean, when you look at what's going on in the world, like you said, we're being inundated with messages, thousands of messages a day, whether you're walking on the street and you see billboards and you see signs in stores, if you're listening to music or podcasts, there's advertising on, you know, you are constantly being bombarded with messages. And so you want to be the message that people remember, because if they have a problem that your product or service can help them solve, you want them to think of you first. Like, oh, I'm hungry. I'm thirsty. I need to, you know, do my taxes. You know, where do I turn for help? And you want them to say, oh, I know what I should do. And that they, that you're the, you, your brand is the one that's stuck in their brain, so that they go, oh, I know where to go. I know who can help me. And if you do that, you're building a solid relationship that turns into a real business. So that's really the name of the game. And when, again, when people pick up the phone or drop me an email and say, I need help, and I say, you know, you haven't built a strong brand, or if it's a small business, maybe the owner of the business, the CEO, is the brand. Like, that person really personifies the brand. And I'll have people say to me, no, I'm not LeBron James, I'm not Beyonce, I'm not Taylor Swift, I'm not really a brand, I'm not famous, I just own the barbershop, or I just own the cafe, but I'm not a brand. But I disagree. I think today everybody's a brand. I mean, we're all walking around with these phones in our pockets. And again, you've got all these social media platforms that you're on. How do people remember you? How do you stand out versus your competition? If you're the founder of a business, if you run a small business, you are the brand. You embody the brand. And so every time someone sees you, you know, if they run into you at the coffee shop, if they run into you at the gym, if they run into you on the soccer field watching your kid's soccer game, you have to be consistent with the brand that you're building, so that you're constantly reinforcing the same core messages. And again, even if it's because, you know, you own the barbershop or you own the cafe, you want those people to say when they see you, oh, you know, the next time I need a haircut, I should give that guy a call. Like, that's the image. That's the brand. And maybe someone says to them, you know, I'm new to town, I'm looking for a really good coffee shop. Do you have any ideas? I don't like going to the big ones. I like to go to the local ones. What do you recommend? Well, if people recommend you, that they become your ambassadors, your marketing department, and they're sending you business. So that's why it's important every day to show up as a brand that people will remember.
That's a lecture right there on marketing and branding. But, you know, it's powerful because, you know, it is part of our lives. And I love what you said. Every day we have this, and we are constantly, you know, representing ourselves, whether within a company or even just individually, especially now in social media. Everybody's got a profile, and it's how they present that profile. Some are exciting profiles and they have a lot of good information. Some people may have maybe some negative, you know, approach to it, and maybe they're more critics, whatever. But you're right, it's just the signature. You know, like I to your point, everybody needs to have their own brand. You know, I mean, I'm Hurricane H. I mean, that's what I created as my stage name, because I wanted something that is different, that is mine, and H is my first name, and it's also health. And so I had a little twist on that, but that's kind of like how you want to do it. Now, some people say, well, my Instagram profile, right? It's not about me. It's really the network. And it's my guests that are more highlighted in there, because I'm not playing on me, but at the same time, it's me. To your point, it's like it's a dual effort, right? You're gonna show the company that you're building, but you also have to have a presence, and it's kind of tricky, and you have to balance that out, and it's very difficult, but you have to keep a signature. And what that is, for example, I see a lot of stuff. I'm in the media, right? I can actually use the same platform and talk about everything that's going on in the world, whether news or stuff, but I choose not to, because that's not the mission. And so we're going to talk about the mission and the vision of these companies from a marketing perspective. But there's a question that is really powerful, and I've had this discussion over and over with mental health experts and psychologists, right? Which is, marketing is psychology 101. You know, so that's a big component. What do you make of that? What do you say to that? I mean, because frankly, you mentioned some of the big names and how they're consistent, and, you know, they really make it look good. I mean, let's talk, for example, Nike, just do it, right? It's a tagline that is, there's eternal. I mean, like, it's funny, we say it even in the shows, hey, you just have to do it. But then you realize it is really Nike's trademark. It's I mean, someone came up with that one just like at a meeting maybe, and it's like, oh, we got to do this. This is ours. And it's never going to go, you know, old. I mean, it's just, that's what it is. It's going to be it. It's powerful and it's going to stick and it makes a difference. There's also the discussion about how companies, sometimes they have a different product, but the way they market is different. We can talk, for example, I mean, was it Red Bull? It's all about, you know, speed and strength and other things. And, you know, it's not the product. They don't really, their commercial is not about the drink. Their commercial is about, like, you know, sports and maybe crazy stuff, you know, stunts and things like that. But really, so they can, I mean, you have also companies that claim luxury. So when you hear them, you hear that name, it's really, you don't think about this. You just think about the luxury life or the style, whatever. So it's a twist and thing, but it's all psychology, because to your point now, it's funny. Again, I mentioned I was in Dubai. That's a very iconic place. I mean, people are really, you know, competing in branding. I mean, if you're not wearing something that has a brand logo on it, I mean, you know, people look at you maybe at a different light. And that's a question that I have for you. You're the expert. You know, branding is what we make of a company, right? It's like what we recognize. But some people can say, well, I don't want to subscribe to that vision, and I don't want to have to buy, you know, something. Why am I being subjected to this? So how do you maneuver through that? I mean, you as a marketing expert, because this is something that's, it's almost, you market, so there's more sales, there's more, you know, a presence and brand image and so on and so forth. And at the same time, you know, and that's the other thing. I mean, in my world in sales, right, you know, we always want to do advertising and all the different techniques in the marketing space to actually generate leads so we can have more business. But there's also, no matter how much you spend on these things, you can spend millions of dollars, but there's a big brand recognition piece that always comes with your work. So there is direct, I would say, tangible results. And there is the ones that you cannot really, you know, touch, because they're basically the things that you mentioned, like people recognize you. You know, it's not so much that you're going to have an immediate result, but it's that. So let's talk about all this, this concept that I'm talking about, psychology and the resistance to the brand and so on and so forth.
So, you know, it's interesting because I do a lot of mentoring to students, and I had a student recently call me and say, you know, I'm majoring in psychology. I don't know what to do. You know, can you give me some career advice? And I said, psychology is a great major for someone that wants to go into sales and marketing, because so much of what you do is trying to get into the brain of your customer. And so what are the messages? You know, what are the breadcrumbs? You know, what matters to that person? One of the biggest things you need to do in marketing is market research, to understand what your target audience wants, what they need, what they have, what they don't have, and look at the competitive landscape and see what real estate is already taken and where are the gaps and holes that need to be filled that you can put your brand. How do you figure out the right words and pictures to take up the real estate that is not being served right now? You know, I think, you know, in marketing, there are features and there are benefits. And what a lot of brands do is they want to talk about all their features. We can do this, we can do that. You know, all the shiny objects that are, you know, in the bag of tricks. But the truth is, your customer doesn't really care about the features. They care about the benefits. How are you going to help me? What is your product or service going to do to solve my problem? Is it going to be faster, cheaper, more convenient? So much of finding the right message, the right word, the right picture to sell a product or service is getting into the head of your audience and figuring out how to communicate to them in a compelling way so that you can solve their problem. That is absolutely the essence of marketing. You know, there are so many products and services in every single category. You know, you have to figure out how you're going to stand out. And that's why you need a compelling name, a tagline, and some key messages. And the thing is, you can't stand for 10 different things. You can stand for one or two things, but people can't remember 10 things. But, you know, when you realize through your market research that there are a few things that really matter, you want to find those benefits and figure out how to communicate in a compelling way that reinforces in everything that you do, how you look, how you talk about yourself, your website, your packaging. Everything needs to be consistent. And, you know, we were talking about all the different social media platforms that are out there. A big problem you can see today is when people try to be one thing on Facebook and something else on Instagram and a different thing on X and a different thing on LinkedIn. You can't do that. You need to be the same. You need to reinforce consistent messaging across all the platforms so that no matter where people find you, they're getting those same core messages, that the values that you stand for, like you said, your mission, your vision. It needs to come out clearly no matter how they find you. Because if you're spreading yourself too thin, it's confusing and you're not building a trusted relationship. And again, a brand is trust. It's something that you know is going to show up in a certain way all the time. That's how you build a business that has customers that come back. They come back time and time again. They're willing to pay you more because you're a trusted brand. And that's how you build a sustainable business.
Well, thank you. And it's amazing. I'm listening to you. And you know, first of all, it's funny because you mentioned features and benefits. And that's a key element that, for example, in my world of sales, we train, you know, inside out, you know, with that, what it means. And you're right, people oftentimes can, you know, think or confuse one or the other. And their features are everything that they pitch, right? But feature is really just what it is. Like, you know, I can press a button, it's going to do this, but what it means to you, do I really need that service? Do I need that solution? And that's really what it is. Like, so, and you have to break it down. Like, well, we use tie downs, like, you know, so you have to explain, how does that sound to you? Does it make sense? Whatever. But, you know, so in sales, we use a lot of that, but you know, it is a very common mistake, as you said, where people think about the feature, you know, like in instance for cars, right? Oh, this thing, you know, can go from 0 to 60. Okay, cool. What does that mean to me? I'm not a race guy. You know, I'm not going on a racetrack. So does that even help me? I need a family vehicle. That's not going to do much for me, right? So, you know, that's the thing. So it is, to your point, very important to distinguish these things and work with them. And again, at the end of the day, it's really solving that problem or that whatever, finding a solution to whatever my needs are as a consumer. So that's one thing. Now you mentioned these things about the platforms and social media. That is the new wave, right? I mean, well, at least that's been happening in the last decade or so. In your hat, I mean, you've gone from traditional marketing, radio, TV, billboards, and paper prints, right? Those were your old stuff. And then you have now the social media, it's a whole different world. You have digital marketing now with all this stuff. How do you see companies, you know, in this transition? I mean, have all companies really, you know, come up? Because I can tell you this, I've been into these positions where you're dealing with companies that are not up to, I guess, the level when it comes to digital marketing and the new wave, right? They're still hanging into the past. And I can tell you, they're not thriving because they're stuck, right? So in your world, I mean, because you are actually advising people from startups to Fortune 500 companies. So you know these dynamics. But just for audiences and especially business out there, people that are like savvy and they want to learn, what would you tell them about this thing and how well, they should really be aware of the idea of adaptation to new technology. And then if you can even go into the AI world, because that's the next wave, right? I mean, actually, it's not even the way it's here already. So what do you think of all that?
Great question. So I think the thing that overwhelms, especially small businesses, because they don't have the big budgets, they don't have the big teams that the big multinational companies have and the big brands. You don't need to be everywhere. You need to make sure that you pick your platforms that really play to your strengths. So, you know, don't spread yourself too thin. What are the platforms that really showcase your product and service the best? If you're a food business, you want to be on Instagram. If you're a professional service business, you want to be on LinkedIn. You know, if you're targeting young people, you know, Facebook used to be the only game in town. And then all of a sudden, older people started using Facebook and grandparents started doing it so they could see their grandchildren. So you have to think about who your target audience is and what are the platforms where they go to figure out whether or not they're looking for something that you offer. And again, you don't need to be everywhere. I have people, you know, clients come to me and say, do I need a newsletter? Should I start a blog? Do I need to be on X? And my answer is, what are you good at? What do you like doing? What's the best platform to showcase your product and service? You need to make sure that you consistently show up on the ones where you are, and you can ignore the ones, like my clients are not looking for me on Facebook. They're not looking for me on Pinterest. So I don't even have an account on those places. LinkedIn for a professional service firm, B2B, is absolutely a critical platform. So I'm going to show up on a regular basis on LinkedIn. It's a great place to showcase thought leadership. And so that's where I'm going to put a stake in the ground. I don't need to waste time on a bunch of the ones that are not reaching my audience. So I think, you know, a blog is another important question. If you like to blog, that's great. But if you don't like to blog or you're not committed to blogging, it could be a disaster. Because I've seen this happen where people start a blog and the first week they are so excited, they post 3 blog postings. People comment, they chime in, it goes back and forth. It's very active, very engaged. 2 weeks later, they're busy. They have a conference. They get 1 blog post and that's it. They don't come back. The next week, they're traveling. They skip it. The following week, they come back. They have 1 blog post and then it's 2 more weeks before they can post again. Well, what you've done is you've trained your audience to say, I don't even think this person's committed to blogging. They seem very flaky. They never responded to any of the postings. So now what you've done is you've diluted your brand. And that's a disaster. So, you know, if you don't have the bandwidth or that is not your strength, what I say is find the blogs that are the most popular blogs in your category. And start following them. And when they talk about a topic that you have experience in, chime in, comment. And every time you make a comment, make it really good. And put your contact info at the bottom. And that way, you get known as, you know, every time Hurricane makes a comment, I agree with him. He's so smart. Hurricane H is the guy, like, he really nails it. That guy is really smart. And then they follow the link and they check out all the other things you're doing. And now you're creating a relationship and a brand that's responsive and smart and credible. But you don't have to be driving the ship. Like, you don't need to keep the conversation going. You just chime in when it's convenient for you. And newsletters are exactly the same thing. If you don't have, it doesn't matter how often you do your newsletter, weekly, biweekly, monthly, quarterly, but once you decide you're going to set that timing, you have to stick with it. Because again, if you skip it and you skip it again and you do it on an off time, people do not know when to expect it and you look flaky. You don't look like you're serious. You don't look professional. There are lots of great newsletters in every category. You don't need to be the one that has the newsletter, but you can contribute to other people's newsletters that are in the same category you're in, and they're reaching the same audience. And you say, could I contribute an article to your newsletter? And maybe I'll contribute one every month or one every other month. Would you mind? And people love to get other content because, you know, it's like you have to feed the beast. They, you know, once you start it, they're always looking for new ideas and always looking for ways to fill the newsletter. They're going to be so happy that you're going to help them fill one of those slots. And again, you're reaching your audience in a way where you're coming in as an expert and, you know, you're being introduced by the trusted relationship that they have. And then they'll go, wow, you know, that's such a great idea. I never thought of that. Who is this person? I want to see what Hurricane H does in the rest of his life. That was a really good point. I never thought of that. So again, you know, social media is great, but you have to use it in a very strategic way. Today with artificial intelligence, like you said, it is here. And, you know, I'm learning it as much as I can, as fast as I can, but I am not an expert by any means. But what I tell my clients is, you know, they think, oh, artificial intelligence can write my newsletter. Artificial intelligence can write an article for me. It's so easy. Well, just be careful that you're using it in a smart, strategic way. Artificial intelligence can grab existing information from the internet, but it's not coming up with fresh ideas. It's regurgitating things that are already out there. So my fear is, and I always warn my clients, if you just let it pull from everything else, it's very generic. It's very robotic. There's nothing that stands out, and there's nothing unique to what your core brand is all about. And, you know, in the world of AI, there's just a lot of generic, I call it the sea of sameness. And what you want is you want to be the brand that stands out. So you need to make sure that while everybody is using the generic robotic copy, that you're really committed to being a strong brand with your unique messages, with what's unique, special, and different about you, so that people remember what you're talking about, that they know that, you know, this is related to your brand, not just the sea of sameness. So, you know, I think it's more important now than ever to be branded and to know what those two or three core messages are, and that you reinforce them so that you are remembered. Otherwise, you're just, you know, it's generic and it's not going to help you. And if you start submitting articles or writing newsletters or putting copy on your website that just sounds like everyone else, people are going to ignore you. They're not going to come back. They're not going to remember. And you're wasting your time. And again, you're diluting your brand. So, you know, showing your humanity, talking about the good, the bad, the ugly. You know, humans have kind of that emotional connection. You can talk about, I tried this, I failed, here's what I learned, and now here's what I'm doing. People remember those stories. Stories sell. The data, the facts, I think when you just throw out a bunch of numbers and generic things, it just blurs over. But if you tell a story that people connect to, that touches them emotionally, and that connects to them on a human level that only you can tell, what's your origin story? What's the backstory? What went wrong? How did it blow up? How did you get it back on track? That's where you build those connections and build that trust and build that relationship. So AI can be great in terms of generating ideas and helping you fix the grammar, or taking a long thing and making it a short thing, but it cannot recreate all the things that are kind of special about how you are different than your competition.
Well, thank you. That's a lot there. So I want to try to poke it a little bit. Well, first of all, I love the idea that you said about the social platforms or social media platforms. And you're right. Each one of them has a unique, angle, audience. I mean, for example, Snapchat is a whole different, place, and people who like to do that, and it thrives in a different space. My kids actually love Snapchat, right? That's their world. LinkedIn, to your point, is for professionals. And here's a story, a true story for me. When LinkedIn launched years back, I actually started LinkedIn before I started Facebook, I was literally like telling people like, this is going to happen. This is where it's going to be more, action, right? For business and professional stuff. And, most people didn't even care about the LinkedIn approach then. But you know what? It worked for me many years later. And I've made great contacts and so on and so forth. Even got jobs, through LinkedIn, over the years, right? So it makes a difference. To your point, Facebook is different. So we have to adjust. And you said something that's very key is like being consistent. And again, consistency is the key, as they say, right? It's also discipline, right? You have to have the discipline to be exactly who you are at all times. And your image, an example, if you go to my profiles, they're all the same. It's still the same message, still the same video. It doesn't change. The LinkedIn has more business, of course, but the shows are still there. When you go to Instagram, it's still the same concept. It's still the mission. So I'm sticking to that. And that's just a concept that everybody should have. And if you do it right, people start recognizing, to your point, who you are and what you stand for. Big difference. The other thing with AI, I love what you said. AI is a tool, right? And really, that's what it is. It is a high-tech tool. And there's ways to use it. I use AI in a lot of areas. It makes my life a lot simpler. It certainly helps in areas that I don't need maybe more, work, and I can make better time, right? Everything I do. But you're right, you have to know how to manipulate the AI itself. Frankly, I'll give you an example. Like, I've actually created AIs that knows me. They literally have everything about my profile, my companies, my ideas, my vision, and kind of it memorizes that, so it knows. And for example, right now, we're talking ChatGPT 5.1 version. It's really high tech. There's Cloud, there's Gemini, and all these, and so that each one of them is different in how they approach it. But the idea is it recognizes me, like literally it calls me partner. Now, of course, it calls everybody partner, but the idea is like it knows when I interact with it what I need, and it gives me exactly what I need when I need it. But it's not its own, it's my stuff. Like, I would give it the information I want. And you can create your own, clones of whatever AI you want that you can feed your own demographics, your information, your statistics, whatever you're looking for, your vision. And you can keep updating that, and it's going to become a lot more unique to you than the individuals. And that makes a big difference. So again, it's how you use it. Like in the past, you've seen a lot of different things. And by the way, I was going to ask you a question. You've worked with Zipcar and Inc.com and some of the people that actually made it big, and the companies that actually were very innovative. And that's the thing. They see value, they had the vision, they see technology and innovation as part of a way to the future, and they thrive. And you did that with them. You helped these companies to the next level. That's exactly what's going on now. So thank you for really touching on these things, because they're big. And the companies that do not see eye to eye to these innovative techs and approaches, they're going to have a little bit of a dilemma. But you're right. You have to be able to work with it correctly and get the guidance. And that's all there is. There's no magic formula here. It's just a matter of adjusting to things and getting the expertise that you need to help you with it. So now I want to talk about more you. Your company is an interesting company. You help companies, do the marketing, right?
I could talk to you forever, but I'm teaching a Tai Chi class in a minute, so I'm going to have to.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, I only had you for an hour. I could talk to you forever. I feel like we barely scratched the surface.
We have. I think what we're going to do is we're going to book a second one so we can talk about the Mavens and Moguls, on its own, and the path and how it approaches and helps people. So with that, I want to thank you, Paige, for being with us today. And for our audiences, look forward to our second part, because I think there's going to be more that we can get from her and get some expertise. So Paige, thank you so much for being with us today.
I've loved it. Like I said, you're awesome. We could talk all afternoon. This has been a great conversation. I hope people have picked up some good ideas and good advice. And thanks for what you're doing. I think you put out a great product and it's been a lot of fun.
Well, thank you. And you know what? Tai Chi is good. I love those things. So go do some Tai Chi and have some fun with that. That's great for you, the mind, the spirit, and the body. We'll talk soon. Thanks, Paige.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, folks. That's the end of our show for this one. This is part one. We'll definitely have a part two. And American Age. We'll be talking soon. New day, new show. Topic. Bye for now.